What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by Off the Glass. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How are we doing, Corey?
Fantastic. Sunday fun day.
Ready to talk some basketball. We have some news to talk about, injury trades, and we got a nice little game to end it with. But as always, check out the Outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Corey, let's get right into the trade, the Bucks and Cavs. You know, the Bucks acquired George Hill from Cleveland and forward Jason Smith and a second-round pick from Washington for 2021. The Cavs are seeing Matthew Dellavedova, John Henson, along with a 2021 first and second-round pick. And the Wizards acquired Sam Decker from Cleveland via Milwaukee and swapped second-round draft picks with Cleveland. So all types of second-round picks moving around in this trade. But overall, what was your reaction to this one?
My reaction initially is from the team that is actually winning games out of these three teams, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a move that says we're trying to win now. And not only that, it's also a move saying we're trying to win this year and then possibly add more talent next season, because getting John Henson off the books, getting Dellavedova off the books, George Hill is an expiring – well, not expiring. They can waive him, I think, and his $19 million won't be guaranteed if they waive him before, I think, July 4th or July 3rd, something like that. So if they waive George Hill, which they're probably going to do because no one's going to want to pay George Hill $19 million, they're going to have, you know, $19 million in cap space to go after somebody else after getting rid of Dellavedova and Henson. So for the Milwaukee Bucks, it's awesome because it clearly shows Giannis and everybody there that this team thinks they can win now, and they're bringing in a vet for this year, and then they're going to be looking to add more talent next year.
I pretty much agree with everything you said. You know, you got George Hill, good backup guard insurance. You know, Malcolm Brogdon, as well as Eric Bledsoe, have dealt with injuries in the past. So you give yourself a little insurance. Also, George Hill, 38% three-point shooter for his career. A veteran with playoff experience, like you mentioned, Corey. The next year of his contract is only guaranteed for $1 million. And you bring in Jason Smith, who's known to be a good locker room guy because a lot of the Wizards players were upset that he was gone. And as you mentioned, the cap relief. Via Keith Smith, after yesterday's Cleveland-Milwaukee-Washington trade, I now project the Bucks to be a cap space team this summer. I currently project them to have $21.5 million in cap space. This includes renouncing and waiving everyone they can expect Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, and their 2019 first-round pick. So this allows them to go out and get a big-time free agent while still being able to keep Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon to go over the cap.
That is – I mean, I don't know how you feel about this. It's not like Milwaukee is a destination that normally brings in top free agents. But $21 million is a decent amount of change. And you got to think that there's got to be players out there that see Antetokounmpo, Middleton, Brogdon, and they think – wow, I would love to play with those guys. And now the Bucks are in a position to bring in somebody like that.
100%. And you think about the pitch you have. You have, you know, Antetokounmpo there. You have a Bud. And you also have a minor ownership in Aaron Rodgers. You know, you bring those all in. You try to pitch to a big-time free agent. I mean, your $21 mil is not going to get you maybe an all-star, but it's going to give you another starter possibly or two really good players, which they did this offseason. So I think it really put the Bucks in a great position. And getting rid of Henson and Dellavedova, two guys who, you know, Dellavedova never really worked out in Milwaukee, obviously overpaid. And Henson, they have Thon Maker. So it just is a really good move from the Bucks. And like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of proving to Giannis is the time is now. We're trying to push this forward. We want you to stay, and we want to become a championship team.
And as you mentioned, getting rid of Henson, you know, now Thon Maker gets a real opportunity to become either the backup center of this team going forward, or maybe even push Brook Lopez out of the starting lineup at some point this year.
Or next year, become the starter, kind of working off this year where he kind of developed those skills. You know, I'm a big Thon Maker guy. I think the potential is there. We've seen these stretches where he's been a defensive monster. He knocks down the three-point shot. So I really, really like this move for Milwaukee.
For sure. And like you said, when you have a star like Antetokounmpo, especially in a small market like Milwaukee, there's always that fear that in time he's going to want to leave or go elsewhere to a bigger market. And I think the Bucks have played probably post-Jason Kidd to now as best as you can in pleasing your star, bringing in a coach like Budenholzer, as you mentioned, and now just having this roster set up. They've done a really nice job in Milwaukee.
Exactly. Now, moving on to the other Central Division team in this trade, the Cavs, they pick up a first-round pick, a second-round pick, bring back Dellavedova, and they get Henson in there. What are your thoughts on the Cavs, just getting that rebuild, getting those assets together, and kind of moving that foot forward?
They've finally solidified that they are rebuilding. George Hill, I think, well, Cora was the first move, now George Hill. J.R. Smith seems to be looming. I feel like he's going to be dealt probably within the next month or so.
Or bought out.
Right, or bought out even. And they brought in assets, like you mentioned. They got a couple draft picks, you know, and a couple of scrappy vets who have big money. But the Cavs are finally putting their foot in the direction towards a rebuild. And now it brings up more questions of, you know, what happens when Kevin Love comes back? Do they try and sell off Kevin Love now? Not saying that there's a giant market for Kevin Love, but now that door is wide open for the possibility of him being moved somewhere else if he gets his value up.
I think they should. I think it would make sense to move Kevin Love. You know, I think it would make sense for Kevin Love wanting to be moved to going to a winning team and not kind of deal with his team tanking. Obviously, when you're taking on bad contracts for picks, you know, you're not trying to be competitive at the time.
Exactly.
And not to mention, I thought this is like a low-key nice part of the trade too. They picked up Henson and Dellavedova, who aren't expiring this year, but they're expiring next year, which can allow them to make a trade where maybe they're taking on another bad contract the following season and picking up more first-round picks, because it's not like they're going to rebuild in 2 years. So I think this is just a really good move from the Cavs, and they probably should have started this summer, but starting it now is okay.
Yeah, I agree. The timing, you probably could have done this earlier, but with what they have right now, and as you mentioned, I didn't even think about the fact that they'll have the possibility of adding another expiring possibly in the future for more draft picks. And that's exactly what you need to do in Cleveland. We saw how the Cleveland rebuild went after LeBron left the first time around. And so far, this has been, even though it started off a little shaky with the extending Kevin Love and trying to compete early, they're starting to finally, I think, have at least a better start to this rebuild than they did prior.
Yeah, it feels better already. I think they're doing it the right way. They understand they have to be really bad, but they're adding a draft picks on the same time. So they're going to have their own picks, and then they're going to add more.
Right, and a bright side is Sexton's playing really well the last month or so.
You have a couple guys who kind of want to prove themselves. You know, Burks is over there, Rodney Hood, guys that kind of want to prove that they're NBA players and they want to work up those contracts and maybe give them some trade value by the deadline. You never know if a team wants to throw you another second-round pick at this time. I think if I was Cleveland, the number one thing I try to do is just add more young players. You know, Markelle Fultz has been a name tied to them a lot. If some way to kind of bring him in, I think that'd be a great year for the Cavs. I think they're really in the right step for the rebuild. Jeremy Free just wrote a great article. He actually wrote an article about the Korver trade. Now I wrote a trade about the George Hill trade for the Cavs side. But moving on to the Wizards, you know, it wasn't really much that got Sam Decker, got rid of Jason Smith, and it pretty much cut down their luxury cap. So good for them.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. It was a luxury tax move. Obviously, when you're not winning, you don't want to be paying a luxury tax. So they cut into that. And Sam Decker, you know, he's serviceable. He can help them a little bit on the perimeter. I don't think he does a ton for them, but, you know, the Wizards need a little shakeup anyways, because as we know, it's been pretty up and down to start this year, to say the least.
Yeah. Out of all these teams, which one, how would you rank them in most likely to make another trade this season?
I would probably say the Cavs would be one. Actually, no. I would probably say the Wizards would be one and the Cavs would be two. Because I think the only other trade really the Cavs have to offer is a Kevin Love deal or possibly, you know, a J.R. Smith. But I think he's more likely to be bought out. Whereas the Wizards, I mean, it's just even though they've had a couple nice wins recently, it just doesn't feel like this is it. It just feels like this team needs to make a big move.
Yeah, ironically enough, they were blown out by the Cavs last night. So it's just like Wizards situation is rough. John Wall had 0 points, only 5 field goal attempts. We know his contract shoots up to 30 mil next year, then 40, and then 41. So it's going to be some complicated situation in Washington. They need to make a move probably now rather than later. Now, other bad news, and this is for the Denver Nuggets, a team that was playing excellent. I think they were third in the West, 17-9. You know, they've just been having an outstanding season. They got some bad news. Gary Harris will be out 3 to 8 weeks with a right hip injury. Paul Millsap broke his toe. There's really no timetable on that. You know, reading some reports, it's possibly 4 to 6 weeks. So it looks like regardless, they'll be without Harris and Millsap for over a month. What does this mean for Denver?
It means Denver's going to fall in the standings. And that's just plain and simple. They've lost their last two already. It's tough. This is a team, if you think about who they've lost already, they have no Will Barton. They have no Isaiah Thomas. Their first-round draft pick, Michael Porter Jr., hasn't seen the floor yet. Now they lose Gary Harris and they lose Millsap. That's, what is that, 5, 6 key rotational players.
Well, Michael Porter could be a playoff team in the East.
Right. Right, exactly. You know, so losing all these guys, I think Will Barton's due back, I think somewhat soon, maybe 3-4 weeks. Yeah. But even still, this is a team that's got a lot of injuries. And in the West, you know, you just can't. I mean, look at their next 5 games
are tough.
Grizzlies, Thunder, Raptors, Mavericks, Clippers. That's not easy. Those are all playoff teams.
You could argue it's a 5-game losing streak, you know, or maybe they win one just because it's tough. Those are all teams, and a lot of them are playing well right now.
like, and right, as you said, they're lost two straight right now, and they just got done losing to the Hawks last night and the Hornets the night before. So this could be a really dark stretch for the Nuggets. I still think they're a playoff team. I'm not really concerned about that. But this is the time that other Western Conference teams, you know, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, maybe even the Rockets are trying to get back into. This is the time they can really capitalize on one of these teams that's up in the conference to fall back down.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the depth chart. Who's really going to step up for them? Losing two guys like this, you know, already missing the guys like you mentioned, Will Barton and Isaiah Thomas. And, you know, you can mention Michael Porter Jr., but he probably wasn't going to play a ton this year. You know, Trey Lyles can fit in that starting spot, and you could probably bring Malik Beasley in the starting lineup. Now it's who comes off the bench and plays in that role behind them. You know, there's not really a ton of depth there. I'm not really sure what they're going to do. I don't know if it makes sense to make a trade for a month. Maybe they call up a G League guy or something, but it's going to be an interesting stretch for the Nuggets.
And I also think Monte Morris is missing time too, I believe.
And I believe he got great too. He's been a nice low-key pickup for them who's kind of had some nice moments. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a lot on Jamal Murray. It's going to be a lot on Nikola Jokic. You know, Hermann Gomez has been playing pretty well too. It's somebody's going to have to step up on this team if they're going to win games. And like you said, the next five games are going to be tough. All those teams are really playing well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Raptors have really found themselves, even though I know you're extremely happy. Your Brooklyn Nets rallied from losing seven straight to upset the Raptors.
Eight straight.
Sorry. Obviously, you know, seven times better.
But yeah, no, it was a good closing out against one of the best teams in the league in overtime. But I'll save that for the Brooklyn Buzz. But the Raptors still, it's going to be a tough matchup. You know, they probably had their one loss for like 2 weeks because they're playing that well. And like you mentioned, all the other teams, you know, the Clippers had a rough game last night. The Grizzlies are always going to make you fight. In Dallas, you know, we just saw them upset Houston. Luka had an amazing stretch.
Even after that five, Nick, then they have to play a back-to-back against the Spurs. And, like, even though the Spurs obviously aren't playing well this year and they've kind of struggled from the lack of three-point shooting they have, I mean, that's still a tough team.
When you got two good players out. I mean, I think Gary Harris and Millsap are two guys that really are two of their best defensive players, and they do good things offensively. I think, what was Paul Millsap just player of the week last week
yeah,
as well?
Funny enough, yeah, he was.
And you feel really bad for Millsap because he already missed half the season last year. Broken toe is going to linger, you know, and the way it happened, I don't know if you saw the play. He was kind of taken out when his foot just slammed to the ground. It just was just bad luck.
Damn. Yeah, I didn't actually see the injury stuff. Just a question on this injury. Who do you think the Nuggets miss more during this stretch, Gary Harris or Paul Millsap?
If Millsap was to continue to play like he did last week, I think you could make the argument for Millsap. But overall, from what I've seen like the last two seasons and Millsap being a little more up there in age, and I really like Gary Harris, and I think he's a player that's getting better. And I think perimeter defense is very important with the West when you have guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, James Harden, you know, and they got guys like Luka out there too. I think you really miss Gary Harris. Like, I really think you do. And he has a really good combination with Jokic cutting to the rim. But, you know, you could probably make an argument for Millsap, but what about you?
I would go with Gary Harris too. I think the perimeter defense he brings and the 3-point shooting.
Great complimentary player.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he is. He's the perfect sidekick to Murray and Jokic. And Millsap's just solid, but I think you miss more so Gary Harris.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what happened. You know, I was high in Denver going into the season. This is kind of going to give him a major hiccup. Like you said, they'll probably still get in the playoffs, but I'll be interested to see how long Millsap is out, how bad the broken toe is, how much it lingers. When does Will Barton come back? When do we see Isaiah Thomas? Will we see Michael Porter Jr. at all? A lot of questions with this team, and there is a trade possibility too.
Yeah, I mean, we're also going to see what kind of coach Malone is. I think he's a very good coach, but now, you know, whenever you're losing this many guys, you're really going to be put to the test.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And the thing that they're going to have to probably look to play Jokic and Plumlee a little bit more together, which is something that's worked a little bit, but it's going to be interesting how that combination works. Malik Beasley, though, is a guy that I know is putting a lot of work over the last few seasons, and some Denver guys are very high in him. I'll be intrigued to see how he plays. Anything else on Denver, Corey?
No, but they are going to be the first they are going to be the first topic in the next segment. I can tell you that.
Okay. Well, passing over to you, Corey. Hit us with your hot take shot fake.
So for hot take shot fake, we got four hot takes or shot fakes. The first one, it's funny. Carmelo Anthony would be a good option in Denver following the injury to Paul Millsap and Gary Harris. Hot take or shot fake?
I think it's a shot fake because you're still signing Carmelo for the entire season. And he's not going to get minutes when they come back. So now it's like you have him for this amount of time and then you're just going to make him sit the bench. I just don't think that's really going to work. And I don't know if Carmelo really fits in their offensive scheme because the ball's running through Jokic. You know, Melo's not ideal coming off ball movement, running off pick and rolls. He's looking still to be that mid-range ISO type of player. I mean, it's a possibility, but I would go with shot fake here.
I'm also with shot fake here. We've seen this. You know, we try and think of Melo on good teams and on teams that are playing for something, and it hasn't worked in two landing spots in OKC and Houston. Granted, he wasn't the sole problem in both those situations, but Melo just isn't the same player he was like his first stint in Denver. And as you mentioned, when those guys come back from injury, Melo's not going to be playing. And is Melo really going to be okay with sitting on the bench not playing? No, that's just not who Melo is. So I agree. I think it's a shot fake. It's a good thought if it was 3 years ago, but not in the current state.
It's a really good opportunity for Trey Lyles, too, a guy that some Denver people believe to be the power forward of the future, and he's going to probably suck up a lot of those minutes.
I like that, too. Trey Lyles in minimal usage has been very solid. Actually, a pretty good DFS player, too.
Yeah, definitely get some value there. What do you got next, Corey?
Luka Doncic is a 6'8 Steve Nash. Hot take or shot fake?
That is very interesting theory there. I hate like comparing players like that. So I'm going to go with shot fake because I think Luka is Luka. He's not Steve Nash. He's his own player. He has different things to his game. He has size. He's crafty. You know, Steve Nash was crafty, but he had a nice little burst to him. Luka uses more of like a mental game and a step back. And I think Luka's just his own player. So I'm going to go with shot fake. I see the similarities, but I just like I'm not huge on comparing guys. That I think Luka will be the best player of his draft class and probably very, very good NBA player. I don't want to say an NBA great until we see him play, you know, at least a season or two.
I'm going to say hot take. And I'm only saying hot take because I just see similarities in which they distribute the ball, their scoring ability, not like fantastic on defense. You know, Steve Nash obviously wasn't known for his defense. And Luka Doncic hasn't been necessarily known for, but they're both pesky defenders. But I go with hot take just because I can see some of it. I can't remember who I saw made the comparison. But like you mentioned, it's kind of hard to compare since Luka does match up at the four.
I think Luka's size just gives him so much more of an advantage than Steve, right, where Steve was always undermatched. I mean, he made it work still. He was absolutely amazing. But I think Luka's size is such an advantage for him, even defensively, where, you know, he doesn't have the foot speed, but he can kind of body you up a little bit where Nash isn't bodying up anybody.
I agree with that. Next one, the Houston Rockets will miss the playoffs. Hot take or shot fake?
I got to go with shot fake. I would be immensely surprised. I think there's already been talks about them looking to make another trade, you know, this week. If they miss the playoffs, that situation is looking atrocious. You got James Harden, who is an MVP caliber player, and then you have Chris Paul's contract for the next few seasons, which is going to be huge. So, I mean, if they do, it would be a terrible situation. So I'm going to go with shot fake. I think they'll eventually kind of get their shit together and kind of boost back up in the standings, but I'm not very confident in that take.
I'm saying hot take. As of right now, and granted, if they make a move, then I probably change my tone. But with this current roster, this is not a playoff team, and it's really not even close. You know, for what it's worth, James Harden still putting up the big scoring outputs and everything else. Not crazy efficient this year. Chris Paul looks to have taken a full step back, especially offensively. Just doesn't look like he can get himself going anymore. Then there's the role players. I mean, I can't believe how much this team misses Trevor Ariza. And Clint Capella, underwhelming. Not bad. You had to resign him. You had to keep Clint Capella. But he hasn't taken any sort of jump in his game like I thought he might have going into this year. This is a team that's kind of plateaued. But as you mentioned, if they do make a trade, which sounds like they're trying to, you know, they're interested in J.R. Smith and adding some kind of veteran presence and talent. I just don't see this team making the playoffs as currently constructed.
I think the major issue for them is I don't even know if it's as much talent. I think it's just like the energy and effort that they were playing with last year. Defensively, they're a very good team. Offensively, they made things work. This year, they just like don't seem to care. It's really like that, you know, conference finals hangover where they feel like they blew their chance. Like I know you mentioned a lot on the outlet and on Phylaxis Hoop. So I don't know if one trade's going to make it happen. I think it needs to be like somebody on the team being like, all right, guys, we need to get going and need to start playing hard. I think Eric Gordon came out with a quote saying it's just not fun. Even the games he has, big scoring nights, it just hasn't been fun. That's probably one guy they can move and try to bring in another type of big piece, but it's not like they have a ton of assets in Houston.
No, and they don't have a lot of cap space either.
Yeah, so it has to be they have, you know, Daryl Morey does a great job of getting creative, but he's gonna have to get very creative here. And maybe this is a team that gets J.R. Smith. I don't know if he's really gonna help them, but I think you have to try anything at this point.
It's literally sink or swim at this
Yeah.
point for the Rockets. And as we mentioned with the Nuggets having those injuries, this is the opportune time for them if they wanted to try and make a run, since one of the playoff teams could fall out. But it's just, again, we as we mentioned, I think every week, the West is just so tough. You know, there's 12 playoff teams in the Western Conference. Only eight of them are going to make it.
Yeah, this is one of the seasons that I'm sure at the end of the year we'll be hearing a lot about. You know, it should be the top 16 teams, not, you know, just the top eight teams from each conference, because there's going to be so much talent in the West that gets missed out on the playoffs.
No doubt that will for sure be a conversation in May and April and May. Last one, the Detroit Pistons will. This was a big topic on the last JBT pod, where Nick and Jack debated Pistons and Pacers. The Detroit Pistons will finish as a top four seed in the East. Hot take or shot fake?
Shot fake. Even if it's not the Pacers, Boston's already getting their ish together and they're looking good. I mean, I got Toronto, Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston. The Pacers right there on the cusp. And the Pacers are playing good without Oladipo. And we know how good Oladipo is, and he's not even playing right now. And I think it's helping. I know you mentioned this before, helping Miles Turner, helping other guys step up. So when he comes back, that team's going to be even better.
Yeah, I'm a shot fake as well.
Big
I mean,
surprise.
the Pistons are playing well, and as you mentioned, you know, the Celtics look like they're finally figuring out. They just had their biggest win in franchise history. I think they won by 58 points last night over the Chicago Bulls.
I saw that. It's just like, come on, like God, Chicago. Yeah, you great job firing head Fred Hoiberg, because he was really the reason you guys were bad.
Oh my God, just no one wants to play defense. And that is, you know, obviously it's against Chicago, but that's the Celtics team I think that we all had envisioned going into this year,
Foot
where
on the floor
literally,
too.
right, where literally everyone is just putting up points and playing well. So I think them coming back into form, that's a lock. And as you mentioned, the Raptors, the Sixers, and the who am I forgetting?
Bucks.
The Bucks. I can't shouldn't forget them. Those are the four home teams. I think, as you mentioned, the Pacers are probably just on the cusp. And as you mentioned, the Pacers last season without Oladipo, 0-7. This year without Oladipo, 7-4. They're winning the games they should win. They're beating under 500 teams. They beat the Kings last night. And you know, when you're as I mentioned, as you just mentioned, which I've mentioned in the past, it's really good for guys like Miles Turner. Those guys are getting confident. And the Pistons, if you look at their numbers, this isn't a team that's really scoring well. I mean, Blake Griffin's
Playing
playing
good
really
defense.
well.
Yeah, that's their offense has not been impressive, and they don't really have a ton of access to make big trades either.
Right. So for me, I kind of think the Pistons, this may be like their ceiling. They're a six seed, or they're at the six right now in the East. This could be like their ceiling, because I just don't see how this roster is constructed that they're going to be able to have enough talent to really push themselves into home court territory.
Exactly. And I think there's just some flaws with the roster. Corey, I'm going to come up with some hot take shot fakes off the top of my head for you.
Okay.
The eighth seed in the Eastern Conference will be below 500 when the playoffs start.
Ooh. I'm gonna say hot take.
Yeah, I think so too. I think either they'll be right at 500 or they'll be like one game under, because the competition right now is kind of crazy. There's so many teams. As bad as the Nets were, they're on an eight game losing streak, and they're still only 3 games ahead of the eighth seed.
Crazy,
So,
crazy.
I mean, and none of the teams are really like, woo. Like, we got Charlotte at the seventh seed, Orlando in the eighth seed. Then you got Miami, Washington, Brooklyn. Even the Knicks are only, what, 5 games out? So
Yeah.
it's pretty crazy. I think that's going to be a major case. I got another one for you. The Lakers will finish with a top four seed in the West.
I'm gonna say hot take. I think I had the Lakers as a four seed going into. We gotta check the tapes. Gotta check the tapes on that one. But I think I said they were a top four seed. I'm gonna stick with that. 7-3 in their last 10. I feel like they're starting to kind of figure it out. I love Lonzo Ball as he's playing right now. You know, he's just not gonna be a superstar. We can cut that out. But it looks like they're probably gonna add some talent. LeBron's getting off autopilot. I'm really happy with this Lakers team currently.
Yeah, I think this is a real possibility, especially with a team like Denver falling out. You know, some of the other teams in like Houston, we expect to be up there in Utah. Now there's an opening in the conference. I think this actually is a Lakers squad that could get a top four seed. The Dallas Mavericks will make the playoffs, and Luka Doncic will win Rookie of the Year.
Hot take. It's funny because this was a big topic before the season. Dylan Jackson said he was going to be the Mavericks were going to be a playoff team, I think, right?
Yeah, hot take marathon.
Yeah, and he was. I think he's right, especially with how Luka Doncic has played recently. Granted, the one thing to note about the Mavericks, who are 13-11, they're 11-2 at home, 2-9 on the road. So just keep that in mind that they're not really winning on the road yet. Eventually, if you're going to be a playoff team, especially in the West, you got to win on the road. But right now, I'd say a hot take. I could definitely see both scenarios. I think Luka Doncic is the runaway for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, he's going to be an amazing player. I think he'll maybe even get some all-star contention with how well he's been playing. Mavericks 7-3 in their last 10. And like you mentioned, the road thing is definitely a concern. But the home record, I believe, is tied for second best in the NBA.
Yeah, looking at other teams, I think they're tied with the Warriors at 11-2. They're tied for they're top five.
All right, last one. We will see two All-Stars traded this season. Doesn't have to be an All-Star for the year. They could have been previous All-Stars, somebody like a Kevin Love, but we'll see two All-Stars traded before the deadline.
Does Jimmy Butler already count as an All-Star traded?
No, we're going for more.
Two more. Okay. I'm going to say shot fake. I think we'll see one more All-Star traded before the deadline. I'm not positive we'll see two. But then again, the NBA is just crazy at this point in time. It's literally an arms race. So I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm going to say shot fake.
I'm going to go hot take here because I got two people in mind. I got Kevin Love in mind because we've already talked about as you're going full rebuild. And they might not get great assets, but if they get one first-round pick, I think they'll be happy and get that contract off the books. And I'm pretty confident that Washington's going to trade either John Wall or Bradley Beal. I just think they're going to continue to collapse, and they're just going to need to make a move. It could be a lateral move. It could be a downgrade. It could be an upgrade. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but it just seems like they're going to trade one of those guys.
So I can see the Bradley Beal and John Wall thing. The only thing that puts me up on the Kevin Love fact is that I just don't know what team has the cap space to really go after him.
Utah is who I have in mind. I think, you know, my man Jack Manuel brought this up. Derek Favors and Kevin Love swap, you know, obviously you mix in some other contracts, some other assets there. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, you got Derek Favors, who the second year of his contract is not fully guaranteed. They've been needing a stretch four. Rudy Gobert can protect Kevin Love defensively. Then you have other good pieces on that team. Now Donovan Mitchell doesn't have to have all that pressure on himself alone. I think that wouldn't be a terrible move for Utah. And they're also not going to have the best of time attracting big-time free agents. So now you bring in another all-star. You don't have to sign him. You have to worry about the contract. But Utah can kind of manage him a little bit better than other teams would.
Well done. You sold me. Well done.
All right, cool. And to Washington, like, what do you think about Bradley Beal to like Houston or something? I don't know. Like, where do you think a Washington trade could happen? Like John Wall, Bradley Beal. What do you think of John Wall to Detroit?
I mean, I saw a lot about John Wall possibly to Detroit. I think that wouldn't be bad. I think anytime you can put a point guard like John Wall with two bigs and Drummond and Blake Griffin, he probably would flourish. Being able to
just
let
the
those
spacing is kind of scary.
Right. Yeah. The space. There is no spacing. Blake Griffin is the best 3-point shooter.
Yeah. Exactly.
But looking at John Wall, I mean, it's the Pistons. And then when you look around the league, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because he's locked up long term, right? He's got another 40 years left. So
yeah,
I wouldn't be totally surprised if like the Orlando Magic tried to swing one or two of their young talent, trying to get them in, maybe even the Miami Heat, who we know have been wanting to bring in talent. Because, I mean, realistically, even though the money is really high on John Wall, he is an all-star, and when he's healthy and when he's at his best, he's been a top-5 point guard. So I think if you're a team trading for him and you want to bring in talent, especially with how hard it is to get talent in the league nowadays, you take that risk for a guy like John Wall. But as you mentioned, I think Bradley Beal just has so much more value because he's just a better player.
Yeah, he fits in a lot more. He fits in a lot of different systems where John Wall has his flaws. Like you said, he's a great player, and he also has that contract where Bradley Beal is a lot more affordable. It'll be interesting what happens. There's been some talk about possibly the Knicks getting frustrated and going after John Wall, having that other star in there for the offseason when they're trying to make a pitch. But, yeah, that would be the Knicks. So I don't mind the Orlando idea, and they've been needing a point guard for a long time, and I think they can make the money work with trading some of their veteran contracts as well. I don't think Washington's going to get great value for Wall. They'd be happy probably to get one first-round pick, especially with that contract and maybe a young player. But that's going to be what happens. You know, how do they work the contracts?
If the Pelicans could figure out some way to swing a John Wall trade.
There's a possibility for them, I believe.
Yeah, that'd be another destination. Yeah, you'd have to package like the Solomon Hill deal. And I'm not sure who else you'd have to package.
They got some other decent contracts. Maybe if they traded one of Mirotić or Randall. I don't think they'd ideally want to do that.
Right.
I think they could probably work something out where they can make it happen. Even if they had to get a third team involved, you know, I think that's pretty likely when you're moving contracts of that size.
Yeah, you said Bradley Beal to Houston. Where else could you see Bradley Beal? Because I still think, like, if I'm the Lakers, and I know this may be dumb, I go all in on Bradley Beal. I get him now because then I have LeBron and Bradley Beal and whatever young stars I keep going into this offseason, and then I'm bringing in, you know, superstar talent saying, look, come play with the three-point shooter and Wall and Beal and playing with LeBron James. How do you feel about that?
I think that would work great. I think maybe you send Brandon Ingram in the salary filler.
I don't see it. I don't see great in him. I see a very solid player, but I don't see what everyone sees in him.
I think the physical skill set is there. You know, the physical skills are there, the size, the length, the athleticism. It's just kind of developing. And I don't know if it's the most ideal situation playing with LeBron. I know I saw the on-off numbers like last week and they weren't very good, where just Ingram needs a ball in his hands a little bit more. So maybe if it was another three-way trade where Ingram's going to a young team where he can kind of have a lot of touches and then, you know, he can kind of get an opportunity to grow. But I like Bradley Beal next to LeBron, even if you still have Lonzo there. And I think some of the guys are upping their value, like Kyle Kuzma's having a really nice season too. So I think there is potential for that trade. Beal fits in almost with any team. There's not many teams in the league that he wouldn't fit well with.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because he's got the offense, he's got the defense, he's versatile on both sides. So
underrated playmaker too.
Yeah, he definitely improved on an aspect of his game last year when John Wall was out, and he really showed his skills. So I think Beal's a name that we'll hear a lot, especially if the Wizards continue to get blown out by some of the worst teams in the league.
For sure.
But any last final thoughts, Corey?
Nope, that's I think that wraps it up.
That wraps it up for today. As always, a pleasure, Corey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Check out the show, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OGGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.